up and let me help, or I'll start calling you Princessa again. Luke complied, and they followed Nyeli and Etta. Nyeli was right. The raiders assumed their prisoners had used the back door. While Pilkvist's men scoured the rear of the bungalow, Lou, Vex, Etta, and Nyeli slipped into the empty front room. Where Kansu had gone, Lou couldn't guess. Etta grabbed a sword from a rack. Nyeli found a pistol on a table. Vex armed himself with a knife from the dining set and handed one to Lou. She slipped it into her belt, her mind still stuck on the laboratory. It could have been as simple as Pilkvist trying to find a new way to make money for his syndicate after the council had taken their usual method of income. But simplicity felt too convenient. Not in the syndicate that had staged the abduction of Milo Ibarra, the one that was allied with Argrid. Was Pilkvist stocking up on magic in preparation for Argrid's takeover? What were they planning to make in their laboratory? Though threads were missing, a patchy tapestry formed in Lou's mind. The humidity of the swamp was stronger outside, the air slimy. Lou followed Nyeli down the ladder, putting as little weight as she could on her injured leg. They reached the bottom and hit the bobbing, drooping planks that connected the docks in front of the bungalow, and trouble found them. A shot sounded. Mech raiders approached, their steamboats chugging through the swamp water. Lou and the rest ducked, clambering down the dock, but the rhythm of their steps thrust the wood up with each footfall. Lou, already unsteady, grabbed the hull of a moored boat to keep herself from falling.
"Down there!"
a raider shouted, and another shot ricocheted in the dark. Footsteps pattered through the bungalow, and the doorway filled with people fighting to get down the ladder at once. Raiders were behind them now. Even more were on boats to their right. Neither the rapid meander nor any of Kansu's boats could be seen. Vex dropped to the hull beside Lou and wound his arm around her again. He shuddered, a brief, sharp spasm, and helped her up. More shots came, the dock rocking dangerously as Pilkvist's raiders stomped down it. Ahead, Etta and Nyeli ran as though the end of the dock weren't approaching, as though they planned to leap into the crocodile-infested swamp waters.
"Stop!" Lou's voice broke. "Etta! Nyeli, no!"
A boat barreled out of the swampy darkness. The Meander, its smokestack belching steam, water sloshing against it in feathered waves. Kansu steered while her raiders fired cover shots at Pilkvist's men. Etta, already airborne, crashed to the rapid meander's deck. Behind her, Nyeli leaped, twisting backward to give Lou a smiling wave. The surprise of it made Lou forget her footing. The unstable dock slammed up as she stepped down, jamming her injured leg. Pain lanced into her half-healed wounds, ripping her from Vex's arms, and she hit the wood. Vex didn't see Lou fall until his legs slipped out from under him, too. He dropped onto her, and as their weight pressed into the left side of the dock, the raiders jostled it again, and the two of them tumbled into the murky water. The chaos above instantly muted. There were no gunshots. No shouting, just the hum of Lou's heart in her ears. She forced her eyes open, fighting past the water's burn. But she saw hazy light through the sheet of filth on the surface. Silhouettes and shadows rippled as the water wrapped its greasy limbs around her and danced her deeper. A hand found her wrist. Lou grabbed onto Vex. In the murkiness, she saw him put a finger to his lips and point up as darkness filled in the weak light. They had drifted under the dock. Vex released her hand and kicked into a swim down the same path they'd taken on the dock. Lou followed faster without weight on her leg, but her lungs started to itch. She needed air. The dock's shadow shifted in hazy light. They were halfway to the rapid meander's hull when another shadow slithered overhead. The jolt of it made Lou realize there hadn't been a single shot fired into the water, even though they'd made easy targets. Now Lou knew why the raiders had saved their bullets. She stopped. Her body buoyant. There was nothing but her, her heartbeat, and her eyes lifting to the surface. The shadow slithered back, stopping above them. Panic crept over her, limb by limb. Lou looked ahead. Vex hadn't noticed and was still swimming, forming bubbles the crocodile lapped up like wine. She called Vex's name, daring to release air bubbles of her own, but there was no noise here. Just sight and feel, the water thick and warm, her body weightless and useless. The crocodile writhed in anticipation and plunged through the water. A slick, unstoppable bullet. Seconds before it reached Vex, its jaw opened. Lou moved. She tore through the water, flailing as much to swim as to draw the croc's attention. It whipped its head to her, sizing her up. Competition or food? Lou scratched at her leg wounds, opening them, letting blood gather around her in murky clouds as her lungs throbbed beyond the point of desperation for air. Food, she willed. The croc snapped around, the force bashing water into Vex's still swimming legs. Vex curved back. His eye widened. His mouth opened. The beast clawed for Lou. She was ready, though. She gripped the knife, the one she'd stuck in her belt. The croc's mouth opened, but Lou grabbed the top of its jaw. The beast shook its head and veered to dislodge her, but she twisted, trying not to slip into the croc's mouth or lose her grip on the knife. She slammed her blade into the more pliable area under the croc's neck. The crocodile bucked away, its mouth snapping open and shut as it fought to escape the metal embedded in its chin. Lou wasted no time. She kicked, scrambling through the water to put as much space between herself and the croc as possible. The swamp waters started to blur in front of her, darkness playing at the edge of Lou's vision. She had gone too long without air. Something twisted around her waist, and Lou thrashed in terror, but to what end? If the croc had her, she was beyond saving. She looked up to see Vex, and the joy of it hit her in a refreshing wave, but her need for air was more important, and she swam, her arms tangling with Vex's as they fought to reach the surface. They broke free with a collective gasp, grime spraying around them, chunks of green sludge sticking to their faces. No sooner had they inhaled than a shot rang out, a bullet funneling the water next to Lou.
"This is your warning, Belle," came Pilkvist's voice. "There's a price on your head."
Lou smacked into the hull of a boat before hands scooped her up and dumped her on deck. Vex dropped down next to her, while more shots blasted off the meander. The engine roared and the boat launched away from the Pilkvist's dock, Kansu at the helm, her raiders, Etta and Nayeli, firing their weapons like mad. Lou braced a hand on the deck and pushed upright, terror-stricken until she saw Vex, folded over his knees, taking shaky breaths into the hollow his legs made. He was all right. A knot in her chest unwound, letting her breathe. Vex looked up at her, water dripping from the coiled ends of his hair.
"Thank you."
His genuine gratitude would have been shocking enough, but he had lost his eye patch in the water. Scars burrowed through his right eye socket in an almost perfect X. Uneven but long healed, a wound he must have received when he was much too young. Lou's lips parted. When her gaze shifted back to Vex's other eye, she saw that he was struck with the same panic that had gripped her when the mechs had threatened to drug her. The horror of nightmares playing out. Vex gasped once, a broken sigh, before he sprang up, threw himself at the hatch, and dropped below decks. 23. The moment Lou stepped below decks, Teo hurtled out of the engine room and attached himself to her waist. He didn't let go until they both lay on a cot in one of the Meander's bunk rooms, Lou rubbing his back and humming the revolution song. Lou knew she needed to rest, if only to get Teo to sleep after all the turmoil. Though a voice in her mind still whispered her unworthiness, especially after she had left him in Port Mezitib, she couldn't deny the peace she felt lying there with him. A few hours later, Nayeli stumbled into the room and heaved herself onto the bunk above Lou. She flopped an arm over the edge, pointing down at her.
I hope you know how lucky you are that I stayed up all night just to save you. The list of things that can keep me up is like Etta's stature. Short.
In the bunk across from them, Etta chirped in her sleep.
Thank you,
Lou returned, whispering so as not to wake Teo. She doubted much could wake him now, though. They were exhausted.
Pilkvist hasn't come after us.
Nayeli slid over the edge of the bunk, looking at Lou upside down, her hair draping in a curly sheet.
If he does, we've got Kansu and her raiders for protection. We'll be fine.
Lou watched for emotion when Nayeli spoke of Kansu, but the bunk room's dim light let things go hidden.
Have you spoken with her?
Have you spoken with Vex?
Lou shifted Teo, pulling the blankets around him.
I'm not sure what you mean.
He's in the pilot house. I'm not good at leading by example, but you should talk to him. He did just save your ass.
She disappeared back into her bunk. The Meander's engine whirred, the noise echoing through the walls. Lou lay still for one long breath before she slipped her arm out from under Teo, crawled around him, and stood. Her leg had completely mended thanks to another bottle of Helica, this one from the satchel she once again had. She took it from the wall hook where she'd left it and slung it over her shoulder. She was level with Nayeli's bunk now. Nayeli grinned at her.
When this is over, Lou whispered, if we're still alive, I'd like you to take me back to the sanctuary. Tanke is part of who I am.
She shrugged toward the outside.
I want to know what it means to be Tunky and on Grace Loray.
Nayeli's face was unreadable.
That's why, actually.
Why what?
Why Kansu and I aren't. Why Fatima threw the family stone at me. I wanted the island to know about the Tunkians and that sanctuary. And Kansu and Fatima wanted it to stay hidden. I thought maybe if the council was aware of how things actually were, they'd do something about it.
Lou didn't move, overcome by the feeling of honor that Nayeli would tell her this.
I fought for this island so it would have a voice, she whispered. I'll keep fighting for that. If you would like an ally, that is.
A smile crawled across Nayeli's face. She spoke in Thuti, then translated.
I called you a sentimental fool.
Could you teach me?
To speak Thuti?
Sure,
she winked. If you control something first, it isn't as scary.
I don't want to control it. I want to understand it.
Same idea, better approach.
Nayeli yawned and rolled over, ending the conversation.
Taking advice from Nayeli felt about as stable as the dock at Pilkvist's, but as Lou left the bunk room and climbed the ladder, she chewed over her words.
Lou had fought for control every moment since the revolution ended, so war would never again occur. But this mission had made her realize what little control she'd had in the first place. The Mecht Syndicate had allied with Argrid and were, for unknown reasons, stockpiling plants. Lou hadn't seen Milo at Pilkvist's. But where to find him now that their only lead had ended in a run for their lives? Was finding him still the best course of action to convince the Council of Argrid's plot? Add to that the matter of Vex's still unexplained connections to Argrid and Pilkvist's revelation that more Argridians were coming.
Give it about a week, Darzi. Maybe two.
And Lou felt as though she'd gone from being hunter to prey. Worse, She had no proof of anything she'd seen. Her testimony might be enough, yet if Argrid's goal was to incite unrest on Grace Luray, the delegates could twist anything she said to buy time for their bigger plan to unfold. Lou needed something that would undeniably prove that Argrid was behind these latest conflicts, and that only the Mechts were working with them, not all raiders. But how? They were still in Back Swamp when Lou emerged on deck. The air glowed a sickly green, as though poisoned by swamp grime, the moisture determined and thick. The canopy made it impossible to tell if it was night or day, yet enough light seeped through that Lou could see the deck, the pilot house, and the closest trees beyond the boat. The meander drifted around great coils of cypresses, their roots arching in the water. Steam trickled through the smokestack. Etta had cut back the engine as much as possible to avoid drawing attention. Vex was alone on deck, slumped against the helm, bumping it right and left with his elbows as needed. His eye was on the bow, as though he drove with only the barest reaches of his instinct, letting thoughts cloud his mind. He'd retrieved another eye patch, the black cup shielding his scar. Lou stepped into the pilot house and leaned against the table. Words gathered on her tongue, but she could only watch Vex in silence, her mind recalling the dread she'd felt when the crocodile had pierced through the water for him, as well as her certainty that he'd come for her at Pilkvist's, and the disappointment when it had been Kansu at the door. She shouldn't let emotion blur her distrust of him. He was a liar and a scoundrel and a criminal. But he was also caring, brave, and, in spite of everything, true.
No comments?
Vex asked when her silence stretched long.
After our interlude in Pilkvist's prison, I'd have thought you were hoarding all kinds of nasty things to say to me.
I felt I should first give you the opportunity to explain.
You're giving me an out? Do I detect sympathy? I didn't take you for someone who would stifle her opinions because of a scar. If I'd known you'd be that easy to manipulate, I'd have shown it to you days ago.
But his voice was too forceful, the pitch of a man who would never willingly remove that eye patch.
You came after me, Lou said, launching herself off the table to stand next to the helm so Vex couldn't ignore her. You risked your crew for me. You've kept Teo safe through everything that's happened. I've decided I owe you one chance to tell me the truth. Take it or don't, Devereaux. But don't you dare dismiss this as pity. I am not that small.
Vex's jaw bulged, tendons in his neck rising to the surface. Lou had never seen him so close to unraveling. While she might have used it against him at one point, she found herself strangely unable to do so.
Fine, Lou whispered. Keep your secrets.
All I ask is that you let Teo and me off at the next port. I'll give you the payment due. Consider your services no longer required.
She turned, heart sinking.
Argridian agents started harassing me,
Vex said. Lou stopped, her back to him, her body framed by the pilot house's door.
They made me sell them plants,
he continued.
Random things, harmless. They thought I'd do their bidding because I'm unaligned. I have no allies, no loyalties.
Lou faced him. Vex didn't look at her, but the muscles in his neck relaxed.
They kept wanting more, and I got tired of...
He stopped, his eye finally meeting Lou's.
I let myself get arrested, so I wouldn't have to be their puppet. I figured if I were in jail, they'd have one less tool on this island. But I wasn't even the worst tool, was I? The Mechts did their bidding instead. And here we are.
Vex spread his hands. Lou bundled her arms.
Who hired you? Argridians, but who, precisely? Milo Ibarra?
Vex didn't say anything, and Lou's frustration reached its end.
If you knew this, why did you go along with my plan?
her demand echoed off her own ears. The moment she had seen Fatima's magic, Lou should have known Vex wouldn't need her payment of plant tonics. He should have insisted on something he did need instead, or left her once she got him out of the castle. He had kept her for a reason. He was getting something else out of this. Lou reached to her satchel for the spare weapons. Knives, variegated holly leaves, drooping fern, poisons. Vex flipped a switch on the wall. The rapid meander stopped and he faced her, his hands out in surrender.
Lou, wait. I didn't mean—
Lou whipped her hand out, keeping him from coming too close.
Was it part of Milo's plan for you to help me?
Why?
Oh no.
Milo had made it look as if stream raiders had abducted him, and she had run off with a raider. If they distorted the details, the Argridians could pin both disappearances on raider abductions and start their war with the full backing of the Council. Kari would fight it as much as she could, but if an Argridian armada was coming in less than 2 weeks, it might have been too late to stop anything. Lou's hand went to her forehead, and she fell against the wall, head spinning.
How many Gaias are they paying you? She panted.
Vex frowned.
What? No one paid me to—
Then why? What is going on?
Lou's question ended in a broken plea. She would have hated herself if her desperation hadn't made Vex bite his lips together, as though her pain hurt him too. He closed his eye. When he looked at her again, she felt she could ask him to bear his soul, and he would.
Your book,
he said.
In the market, you had a book with a bullet hole in the cover.
Lou's fingers went to her satchel. Botanical Wonders of the Grace Luray Colony was within. Alongside its bulk, she felt another, smaller protrusion. Not a weapon, not a vial of plants. Her mind went blank for a moment before she remembered the stone that Fatima had cast at Nayeli. Family, Nayeli had said.
What of it?
Lou pressed, but her fingers stayed on the stone. He lifted one hand to massage the back of his neck.
I heard a story about the night the revolution ended.
He judged her reaction as he talked.
About a girl the Argridian army found when they took the revolutionaries' headquarters.
Lou couldn't react. Couldn't feel a damn thing.
They tortured her to get her to tell them where the rest of the rebels were hiding.
Vex continued.
She didn't break, not even to tell them her name. The revolutionaries took the headquarters back that same night with the help of the Stream Raider syndicates and forced the Argridians to a negotiation. But the girl disappeared.
Back swamps noises amplified in the stillness. Crickets chirped, frogs croaked, a whistling wind made the branches shudder.
Why does this matter?
Lou asked, but she barely heard herself. Vex's hand fell off his neck, and Lou realized he was trying to reach for her. She backed up, but her spine smacked the wall. The pilot house's door was on her right. Vex stepped away before she had to flee.
During the raid,
Vex said, hands in his pockets.
The Argridians tried to kill the girl. Shot at her, and a book stopped it. It had to be you. How many people carry around books with bullet holes in the covers?
How do you?
Lou slowly lost control.
How do you know that?
This matters.
Vex didn't break for her question.
Because of the way they tortured you that night. You don't have shaking sickness. At least, I don't think you do. I haven't seen you show signs of it. Do you have it?
What? No, of course not.
Vex smiled, relieved.
You don't have shaking sickness, he repeated, savoring the words. You survived the things the Argridians did to you. You survived the
A shiver made him twitch.
You survived the methods the Argridian king uses to torture people.
Now Lou's confusion won.
The Argridian king?
That's who sent his spies after me to give him Grace Luray's magic,
Vex said.
That's who's been experimenting with it for years. Eleazar Gallego, the king of Argrid.
24.
He's done, Yakis said.
The prince is ready to join our holy crusade, Eminence.
A smile lit Eleazar's face. It was the most relieved Ben had ever seen his father. Eleazar rushed forward, enveloping his son in a fierce hug. The touch struck horror through Ben. Scars crying out from memories of the other times his father had touched him. His body didn't know what to do with this show of affection. Neither, it seemed, did Eleazar. He jerked back a second later, fingers digging into Ben's shoulders.
Benyet, you finished the potion?
In the basement of Grace Neus Cathedral, it sounded like a prayer. Ben's gut cramped, driving him back a step. He should have planned for this, but here he stood, dumbstruck, a jar of healing potion in his pocket, and no idea how to go about this interaction. So he had the power to change Argrid without Eleazar manipulating anything good that might happen.
It's not ready,
Ben tried.
I haven't tested it. Let's remedy that. You there, unlock this cell.
Eleazar called, and a Monksy flurried down the hall, keys jangling. Details filtered to Ben. The shaking sickness patient, another mecht, though his body was so thin that he looked nothing like the typical well-muscled people of his land, lay on a pallet, his eyes half open. Bruises and cuts and scars covered his skin, and one leg was contorted so much it might be broken. Yakis pressed closer to Ben, a hand going to the small of his back.
He's here. He's ready. I know who you need to heal. Trust me.
Was Yakis on Eleazar's side in all this? Ben's heart screamed, begging his mind to stop piecing through everything Yakis had said. He didn't know what was happening, but he knew he needed to be clear-headed for this. The Monksy bowed and moved beside the open cell. Eleazar swept in and stood over the prisoner, looking from his convulsing body to Ben.
How do you administer it? Drinking, I assume?
Ben eyed the Monksy, who waited, solemn and unafraid. Why was he not begging for forgiveness from the pious god? Ben had seen church servants shudder at the mere mention of magic, and now, when Ben was about to use magic in Grace Neus, this Monksy didn't care? Ben stepped forward. He removed the jar from his pocket and prayed for the first time in years that the potion wouldn't be effective. That he'd have time to work on it more, to develop it for himself, not for Eleazar.
He has to drink it, yes.
Ben cleared his throat and knelt next to the prisoner. The disease had gripped the man almost to the point of death. He didn't moan when Ben cradled his neck, tipping his head to open his mouth. Ben uncorked the jar, feeling the Monksy's eyes from the doorway. Yakis, a defensor of the church, stared at him from the hall, and Eleazar, the Eminence, stood over him, while Ben held condemnable magic in his hand. He'd gotten here, to this irredeemable place, because Eleazar had pushed him to it, because Ben hadn't had the foresight to escape it, because he wanted this, he wanted to offer a real, true cure to someone suffering. If they killed him for this, at least Ben could die with that satisfaction. He stilled his galloping heart with a deep breath, put the vial to the man's lips, and poured all of the liquid into his mouth. Ben waited and watched and swore he could already hear a crowd chanting his name, Principe Herexe. Slowly, the prisoner's skin knit back together. The cuts and scrapes on his body sealed, bruises faded, his broken limbs straightened. Even his scars smoothed over, and had he not been unconscious and covered in prison grime, he would have looked the picture of health. Ben's throat closed, and he fought choking, fought to breathe.
No, no.
Did it heal his shaking sickness?
Eleazar demanded.
As if in response, the prisoner arched his back, limbs snapping onto the stones in a tremor.
The healing tonic had cured everything, except shaking sickness. Ben let out a broken gasp. It hadn't worked. He had time. He could...
Eleazar drew a dagger from his hip and raked it across the unconscious prisoner's arm.
Blood spilled over the stones and wrenched Ben back to himself. He flew to his feet.
Father, stop!
The plea came of its own accord, one he'd quit making years ago, when he'd learned that only things like, I admit my sins, and I wish to be the pious God's servant, stopped his father.
Yakis wasn't moving to help. He and Eleazar stared at the prisoner as blood trailed down his arm onto the floor.
The monks he watched, too, and Ben's terror returned full force.
It isn't permanent.
Eleazar swung on Ben. The prisoner bled and the monksy pressed a bandage to his arm and Ben's whole world contracted to the solitary action of Eleazar's fingers curling into a fist.
This potion is useless to me. It doesn't cure shaking sickness. It isn't permanent. You have been wasting my time, Benyat.
Wasting time? Why would you do this here in Grace Neus Cathedral? The pious God will condemn us.
He played the part of devout son, the one who was safe and unbruised and alive.
Eleazar ran a hand down his face. He looked tired.
I couldn't tell you for your own safety. The work you have done was for a greater goal.
In the hall, Yakis moved to the alternating calm and intensity as he hummed the song his sister had written. Ben couldn't look at him. Wouldn't.
Before you were born, your uncle and I shared a dream.
Eleazar continued.
Our military struggled against Grace Luray, so we believed the secret to bringing the islanders into the church lay in finding a holy use for their magic. But Rodrigo's intentions changed. He began to believe that all magic could be good, while I adhered to the belief taught by our pious God, that the devil corrupts most magic, and common people are unfit to use it. But the pious God has a plan for magic after all.
Eleazar leaned closer with a bright smile.
We will use magic to overpower sinners and cleanse our country of the sickness and poverty they bring, which is why your potion is so necessary. The experiments already undertaken to try to enhance magic have proven ineffective.
Ben barely heard his father over the grating of his own breath. Eleazar believed magic could be good. Only recently had Ben heard his father speak in favor of magic. Before that, it had been evil and sin and stay pure ever since the Inquisitors fell. Ben held strong.
Experiments?
He questioned.
Over the years, I have enlisted the services of others like you, who can piece together magic in holy ways with the blessing of the pious God. They have been attempting to make the effects of botanical magic permanent. Imagine, Benyat, to be inhumanly strong forever, to be able to heal yourself no matter the injury or illness, to have unmatched speed. No evil could stand up to that. All this time,
Ben said, gagging.
You've had people experimenting with magic after you disbanded the Inquisitors? Rodrigo had corrupted their work. The work I oversaw was pure, but the pious God has let me see that I am not the one destined to create permanent magic. The experiments I oversaw involved giving subjects larger and larger amounts of plants.
But when anyone consumes too much magic, the long-term results are, though delayed, unfortunate.
Ben followed his father's gesture to the prisoner.
Shaking sickness,
Ben guessed.
You caused it. Certainly not. It is not uncommon for raiders to overdose on evil. This is further proof that the pious god condemns it. He chooses when and where to strike them for their sins. But the pious god blesses those who suffer from shaking sickness due to our tests. In the name of purity, to undo the devil's hold on the world, we must make sacrifices.
The stones under Ben's feet turned to liquid. Ben mattered little to his father, and he'd often wondered, when he'd been childish enough to hope, if Eleazar was capable of seeing anyone as a person, rather than a tool to be used. But Eleazar had been forcing so much magic into people that their bodies shook apart. And he'd been doing it while he condemned others for using magic. No one was off-limits to him. No one mattered. Ben stumbled out of the cell, needing air, needing light. But the only things down here were darkness and lies in every brick and stone. Yakis reached for him. Ben tripped and grabbed the bars of the cell across the hall. Inside, the mecht stood, close enough for that familiar heat to wash over Ben.
Our enemies must not know of our work,
Eleazar continued.
And for the purity of your mind to remain intact, I could not risk letting you know the truth. The result, while not what I asked, is still promising. You have created a potion that can heal even old wounds. I have had people working to unlock the secrets of botanical magic for decades. I have had the most devout monksies try to save mecht warriors who might help our cause. But their minds are given over to barbarism. Yet you alone created this enhanced healing potion in mere weeks. With it, they will never defeat us again. Who?
Ben caught his broken timbre and pulled it level.
Who won't defeat us? Those like Rodrigo who believe the world does not need to live in purity and penance,
Eleazar responded. His voice put him closer. He'd followed Ben out of the cell.
Those who would see raiders allowed to sell whatever magic they want. Those who would let people live lives filled with excess, debauchery, and corruption. As long as they endure on Grace Luray, the pious god keeps Argrid trapped in plagues and destitution as punishment for letting Grace Luray's evil infect the world. No more, Benya. No more.
People like me, then? Ben almost said. But he'd been lying for years, and beyond the pain, the betrayal, that survival kicked in. His father wanted to make all magic permanent. He wanted potions to enhance speed, strength, healing, and more.
Missionaries are only as successful as the armies behind them,
Eleazar had once said.
You want to create an army?
Ben guessed.
Yes. The most unstoppable defensors the world has seen, who will erase the evil that has cursed us. We will use them to retake and purify Grace Luray. We will use them to purge Argrid. We will use them to ensure the pious god's teachings are never rejected. You're closer than anyone has ever gotten to a solution, and we will need more than healing. Potions for stamina, for defense. The pious god wills it. And I believe that you are the one he has given us to uncover this destiny. I trust you to continue your work.
Eleazar laid a hand on his shoulder. Ben winced.
Defensor Rayan has kept me updated on your progress, and he assures me that your intentions align with the pious gods. Together, we can bring the evil of the world to its knees.
Defensor Rayan has kept me updated on your progress. The words were hands on Ben's back, shoving him. Ben had asked Yakis if he had heard anything about this task when Eleazar first gave it to him. Yakis had been next to Ben the whole time, watching and taking note and reporting every move Ben had made back to the king. He had feigned ignorance as Ben had worried and hesitated and fought to hide anything that might displease his father. And all this time, Yakis had been Eleazar's spy. How much had Yakis told? How many of Ben's secrets did Eleazar know?
Hold on, Ben pleaded with himself. Hold on. Don't fall apart yet.
Ben opened his eyes. The Mecht's face changed. His blue eyes were narrow, calculating.
I'd need more supplies,
Ben said, emotionless.
More plants.
Eleazar squeezed his shoulder.
I already have a trip to Grace Loray planned. The delegates there have met with success. Your potion will augment that.
Ben almost asked, how will my potion help treaty negotiations? But his father hadn't mentioned the treaty. No, Ben thought. What have you done to Grace Loray? He blew out a breath and faced his father.
I'll also need a laboratory, a true one, safe from attack, and no more lies. I serve the pious god, and you will involve me in his plans.
Eleazar smiled. All Ben saw in that smile was insanity.
We are defensors, and we will cleanse this world anew for the pious god. Let us leave now.
Eleazar took his arm to steer him back up the hall. His control frayed with every affectionate swipe of Eleazar's hand, so as Yakis touched Ben's arm too, Ben brushed him off. There were only so many lies he could tell without disintegrating.
Praise the pious god,
Ben murmured to his father. Sweet Pete. Availability, moderately common. Location, peat deposits in back swamp. Appearance, vibrant sapphire flower. Method, ingested. Use, dissolution of internal organs. 25. Lou had never told anyone what had happened the night the war ended. Not her parents, not even Annalisa, who had stayed hidden in the upstairs room, while the Argridian soldiers assumed only one girl had been hiding under the narrow bed. The Argridians killed everyone else in the cabin, deep in the jungle, outside the northern Port Camden. Few revolutionaries had been there at the time. Most, including Lou's parents, had left to seize an Argridian storehouse. But that tip had been a trick to empty the headquarters and make it easier for the Argridian army to capture it and the revolutionary secrets contained within. As darkness fell, soldiers stormed the building, yanking Annalisa and Lou from their sleep. Lou shoved Annalisa under the bed first, closest to the wall. There they listened to the crash of swords and the pop of rifles, Annalisa weeping against Lou's back, Lou watching the floor from beneath the fluttering of the bed's lace-edged quilt. As booted feet stomped into the room, Annalisa muffled a sob, but not enough. Soldiers, driven by bloodlust, yanked Lou out from under the bed, threw her across the room, and shot at her. Until a commander entered, furious that the documents they had found were only common maps of the island. They needed information. They needed to know the locations of the other headquarters, plans for attacks, or the names of spies hidden within the Argridian ranks.
Keep her alive, he'd said. She's our only hope for this mission's success.
The soldiers' desperation had shown in their bloodshot eyes and the commander's ragged voice as a small group of them took Lou into the main room. The war had not been kind to Argrid over the past months. This was their chance to turn the tide. To keep her awake, the Argridians gave her far more awasia than anyone should take. When none of their methods made her talk, they gave her Croxy, a rage-inducing plant, and let her thrash and scream and pray her heart didn't rupture. When that did nothing, they gave her a single dose of Lazenade so she couldn't fight back, couldn't speak. She could only watch, a prisoner in her own body. And by that time, the commander didn't care what information they got from her. He only wanted her to suffer, because a child had made him look a fool in front of his men. Lou came back, her body pinned to the wall of the rapid meander, the croaking of frogs reminding her that they were far from that overrun, hellish headquarters. But her eyes stayed on Vex, the whole of the pilot house between them. His lips parted.
Adaluna,
he said, an offering. She sank to the floor, knees to her chest, hands flat on the wood. Lou had never told anyone what the Argridians did to her. Tom and Kari found her, the effects of Lazenade keeping her immobile, and Tom took her into his arms while Kari made quick work of the Argridian soldiers they had caught. The rest had fled and would join their fellows in surrender by morning. But voices carried from the room where the revolutionaries held the prisoners.
They surrendered, Kari. You can't kill them.
Trust me, came her mother's iron response.
I won't.
Lou only spoke hours later. She asked for the book that had saved her life and read it cover to cover. The Lazenade wore off, but the Awasia, the Croxy, those she felt for days after. A constant need to move and go and escape that she had attributed to the high doses of magic the Argridians had given her. She took the counterplants to purge her system, as outlined in Botanical Wonders. Drooping fern to combat the Awasia, Narcodium creeper for the Croxy. Now a raider sat across from her, knowing what would destroy her. All he had to do was threaten her with Lazenade as the Mechts had. Tears crested on Lou's rising tide of self-hatred, that she could be so easily undone.
How do you know this?
She regained herself.
What does it have to do with Argrid? With Milo?
What did it have to do with Argrid? Everything. Vex slid to the ground across from Lou. He couldn't stand while he told her this.
I made it my business to learn every move Argrid made,
he started.
Especially when it involved torturing people with botanical magic.
Vex flexed one of his hands. Dread filled his whole body, but he forced himself to move before he could reconsider. He lifted his hand and held it straight out. God, he was always so careful, keeping tight control on every damn muscle in every damn limb. But he let go, and his arm started to shake. Convulsions that ricocheted to his neck, down his torso. He looked from his hand to Lou. She stared, recognition clear on her face.
You have shaking sickness, she breathed.
I found myself a victim of the Argridian king's torture. Same as you,
Vex said, curling his hand to his chest. But he'd set off a chain of shaking with that demonstration, and shudders came, wave after wave. He'd learned to hide it, working against each one with precision, a flex of his jaw, a shift of his shoulders.
I was about as young, too, and strong. I became a subject in Eleazar's experiments.
Lou's mouth opened.
He has his soldiers force magic on people.
Vex kept talking, eye on the floor.
Vials of plants, clouds of fumes, everything. So much that by the end you can't remember what you were given. They tell you that it's for the pious god, that it's to find holiness in impurity.
Vex met Lou's eyes again, though it killed him, as though he'd flayed himself raw and her gaze was salt water.
Afterward, they give most subjects the memory-erasing plant Menesia. Make them forget it happened at all,
he said.
But I got branded and shoved back out into the world, knowing what would kill me.
Kill you?
Lou asked. Vex paused, letting her think it through.
That was what gave you shaking sickness,
Lou panted, rising onto her knees.
The magic.
Eleazar lets a few people go without Menesia,
Vex continued, worrying at the mark on his right hand.
And either blackmails them with their own impending death or threatens to give their families shaking sickness if they don't do what he says. They look for the cure on their own, but listen when his lackeys come calling in case Eleazar finds the cure first.
Vex stopped. So much was left in him, and he felt too close to vomiting everything here in the pilot house. Besides, he had to know what Lou's reaction would be. She'd seen his scar on the deck and given him that surge of sympathy, and goddammit, he would not spend the rest of whatever time they had together with her treating him like he was weak and damaged. If she changed, started treating him all, well, nice, he'd drop her off at the next port like she wanted. He didn't need her on his crew. Why had he told her? He knew she'd already given in to pity once. What did he want to happen here? His breath locked in his lungs, Vex waited and hoped. The rapid meander bobbed in the current of the swamp, but Lou felt unsteady beyond that, her body a buoy in a sea of information. Annalisa and her mother, Bianca, had been immigrants from Argrid. The two of them had died from shaking sickness, while Teo, born in Grace Lorraine, had never exhibited any signs of the illness. The cause of the disease had always been untraceable and incurable by healing plants. The symptoms showed up intermittently and unpredictably. The victims or their healers could never pin down a cause because most people couldn't recall Eleazar's men testing on them. Lou saw Annalisa, strapped to her filthy infirmary bed. She saw Eleazar, a faceless king from a murderous land, raking a knife across her throat.
What does Eleazar want? Lou asked.
Vex cocked a sad smile.
He claims the church is trying to find purity in our evil magic. He wants to make the effects of useful botanical plants permanent, so he can have an unstoppable military to back the church. His soldiers wouldn't have to find more plants or retake doses. They'd be perfectly strong, heal instantly, fight without tiring, and so on.
Lou buckled, bracing herself on the floor.
That was why the Mechts had stockpiles of plants, she said. To support Eleazar.
Argrid's king had made the Mecht raiders abduct a diplomat to bring civil war and instability to Grace Lorraine. He wanted to weaken the island enough to retake it, but Argrid's military remained small, even with a raider syndicate on their side. If the council allied with the other three syndicates, as Lou hoped they would, Argrid would still be unable to hold the island. That was why Lou had wanted to warn her parents. If the council put aside their prejudices and harnessed the support of the Tunkian, Grosden, and Emmerdon raider syndicates, the united force would be enough to prevent an Argridian takeover. But Eleazar had foreseen that, too. He had guaranteed that the council would be rife with hatred for raiders, and he had something else to tip the balance. Not just magic. The council and raiders could counter that with their own. But permanent magic. Once Eleazar made magic permanent, he could dominate Grace Lorraine with an army of undefeatable, tireless killing machines. He was already on his way, according to Pilkvist. Which meant either he had found the way to make magic permanent, or he was close. Lou refocused on another detail.
Fatima wasn't able to cure shaking sickness, she asked.
She has a knowledge of
healing plants don't work, Vex said. Fatima even tried a syrup of cleanse root.
Lou frowned.
No, I meant she hasn't.
Her eyes widened. Fatima hadn't realized what would cure it. The whole island treated this condition as a disease. Lou had approached it as such, too, because what else would it be?
It isn't a disease,
Lou mumbled, half to herself. Shaking sickness was a side effect of too much magic in a person's body. And the most effective way to purge someone's system? Taking the plants that neutralized the ones they had ingested, even if it had been years since they had been tortured. Lou had, unknowingly, cured herself of shaking sickness.
At the time, she had taken the counter plants as prescribed by Botanical Wonders of the Grace Luray colony because she had wanted to clean herself from the inside out. That had been mere days after the Argridians had tortured her, and the effects might not have needed to be as strong. But for anyone like Annalisa or Vex, who had been tortured an indeterminate amount of time ago, Lou remembered Fatima dissolving the budweek beans to concentrate them and increase their potency, a form never conceived of by the authors of Botanical Wonders. And Lou knew the cure. She knew the cure for shaking sickness.
"You know,"
Vex guessed, rolling forward onto his hands and knees.
"You know what you did to keep yourself from getting shaking sickness, don't you?"
She almost told him, but she bit down the explanation. Vex was still working with Argrid. Lou flew to her feet, resolve stomping out her sympathy.
"You will drop Teo and me off at the next port," she repeated from a lifetime ago. "We are done."
They would return to the council. Lou would alert her parents, without Vex. Vex scrambled up as well. Surprise crossed his face, a shocked pleasure. She realized he'd been waiting for a reaction like her sympathy when she'd first seen his scar, but she hadn't changed her demeanor toward him, and the relief on his face was undeniable.
"I'm not working for Argrid," he promised, breathy and grateful.
He cleared his throat, sobering.
"I didn't bring you along on this for Eleazar, Lou. Please."
He grabbed her arm as she made to leave the pilot house. She whipped her head back, glaring, and Vex released her.
"Lou, I lied to you. While a lot of it was because I don't want to die, everything I've done since I got out of the church's prison has been to fight Argrid. They said they'd give shaking sickness to everyone I cared about if I didn't do what they asked. But you have no idea how much I hate that country, what they did to me, what they took from me. If you believe nothing else, believe that I will do anything to see Eleazar brought down."
Lou curled her fingers into fists, her body half turned away from him.
"You think," she started,
"that I would help you with that? You figured out the cure. You have the ear of Grace Luray's council, and you are quite self-sacrificing when it comes to protecting this island."
Lightness returned to Vex's face, and he took a step toward her.
"I was content to run from Argrid, but this whole mission, you, it's made me realize I can't keep running, so yeah, I'm asking for your help."
Lou's fists relaxed.
"You should have told me all this," she said, "from the beginning."
He shrugged.
"I'm not one to confess my secrets to crazed women who use manipulation to ensnare me in their own plots."
Lou squared herself in front of Vex.
"Can we at least agree now to trust each other?"
His smile went sly.
"Does this mean you're staying?"
The swamp air felt soggy in Lou's lungs.
"Staying to get in my way, you mean?"
Kansu stood on the deck. Nayeli was behind her, and Etta. Lou had been so focused on Vex that she hadn't noticed them come up. How much had they heard? Her gut sank, but she faced Kansu.
"You're not still planning to attack the council?"
Kansu looked away, and Lou latched onto her uncertainty with the ferocity of that crocodile coming after them.
"Say you do go to war with the council," Lou said. "The Tunkian Syndicate attacks, and the council finds out that the Mecht Syndicate is allied with Argrid. Those two betrayals, two raider syndicates turned against them, will destroy any trust that might have existed between the council and the syndicates, which is exactly what Argrid wants. Argrid will come, and while the council is busy fighting all raiders, Argrid will destroy us with our own magic. That is the only outcome, Kansu."
Lou paused.
"You know that after talking with Pilkvist. I saw you realize it."
Kansu frowned.
"I wanted this island to be ours, free from oppressors. I don't always get along with the other syndicates, but I thought they all wanted that freedom too."
She paused.
"But if Pilkvist has sold us out to Argrid, and they're coming in less than 2 weeks, 2 weeks?
Vex gagged. Eleazar's heading here now?
Someone is. Kansu shrugged. Eleazar or another Argridian royal or their whole damn fleet.